Knife,
a podcast of the cinema
and voguing.
Dave and I were trying to vogue to our theme song. It's a bit of a challenge.
Listen, it's the little things that make life worth going on for each day.
Sure.
So, you know,
it's the things that get you out of
having bed. A private vogue is. It's one of those little things.
It is.
Yeah.
No question. You're Dave White.
Yeah.
I'm Alonzo Duraldi. We're both film critics and we're married to each other.
Yeah.
We both write for The Wrap, and I am on a couple of other podcasts like Who Shot Ya and Breakfast All Day. And
sorry for the cough.
And This Is Us.
Don't. Don't do that. Don't bring up things that I don't like.
Do you not like it, or do you just not? Because we watched the pilot.
Wait, what? No, that's the name of the show.
Yes.
What's the movie?
The movie is Life Itself.
Okay, the show is fine. I saw the show one time.
Yeah, we watched the pilot.
And I thought, wow, ooh, clever, tricky. Like,
pulled the rug out on me.
And then I learned from other sources that that's kind of how the show is always doing you.
With a zing.
And then zinging you and killing people and crockpot fires and stuff. And then that movie came out, which is basically This Is Us, the movie. Yeah.
This is a garbage fire.
Just go listen to the episode where we talked about it. We're not going to re-litigate that nightmare. We have to stop, or rather... We have to interrupt this podcast in 19 minutes and 45 seconds.
Okay.
I got a glaze of ham.
You've added an element of suspense.
Yeah.
We have a literal ticking clock.
We do. It's on my phone right now.
This is like an Amblin adventure from the 80s.
It's Iggy Pop's birthday.
Is it?
In addition to being Easter Sunday,
mm-hmm.
It's Iggy Pop's birthday.
He's
71 years old.
So he is older than my sister-in-law, whose birthday it also is today.
Wait, Susan.
Yes.
Okay. I was like, Susan's not even close to being 71.
Well, of course not.
Yeah.
I didn't say she was. I just said she's younger than Iggy Pop. How much younger, we will not say. Because she's a lady.
Well, that's irrelevant. She just wouldn't want us to do it. Your brother wouldn't want us to do it either.
Probably not.
Yeah. That's my only news.
Is that...
Oh, wait. No, you know, I do. We do have other news. This week, coming up... If you're a Patreon listener, we'll talk about that later. There will be shows that we are going to pre-record.
Yes.
Because you are leaving town to go to a film festival.
Yes. If you're in Dallas,
and so,
come check out the USA Film Festival.
Right. You'll have to choose between an evening with Tracy Lords and an evening with, who is the competition?
Udo Kier.
Udo Kier. What? Who programmed them on the same time?
I'm sure it's probably that was the night they could be there, you know. Just think of how amazing that reception is going
to
be.
Life is unfair. What you want to be in the presence of both of those magics for cinema.
Yes.
And that's like, I blame your old boss, frankly.
No, yeah, no, I do. No, I do. No. You don't look. I having been
you could tell her I said so.
Having been in this position, I know that you book the talent on the night when the talent can be booked. And if the talent is gonna
Were they both busy on other nights of the weekend?
It is quite possible, yes.
Fine.
Trust me. Look, nobody does that on purpose. You do not put those two opposite each other, unless that's the only time you could get them.
Yeah.
That's how that works.
All right. I'll defer to your wisdom and knowledge of this situation. It was just more fun to blame your ex.
Yes, I know you like to do that. But take it from someone who knows.
Fine.
USAFilmFestival.com. Download the whole schedule.
Did they both direct their own projects, or are they just starring in something each?
I think they're each starring in something, although she has direct... Actually, she might... They might be showing a short that she directed, because she did do one for, like...
Oh, cool.
The Fox sort of Emerging Writers Lab. I forget what it's called.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's great.
She's got a lot going on.
No, I know. She was on Gilmore Girls. That's all that matters to me.
Anybody who is in the Rolodex of both John Waters and Amy Sherman-Palladino.
I need to see her on Mrs. Maisel.
Oh,
coming up. That's my dream.
There you go. Season 3.
And make it happen. Keir somehow on Mrs. Maisel.
That might
together
be...
playing a couple. Like get that accomplished.
Well, maybe in season 3 if they go to Berlin instead of Paris.
Yeah, yes. I would just like to get what I want for once in this life.
Yes, you never do. Poor you. I let you eat the ears off of a solid dark chocolate bunny today.
You offered. I didn't beg or ask or anything.
No, I know, but you got what you wanted.
I did. I'd have gotten more what I wanted if you'd have made it a milk chocolate bunny. I know dark chocolate is what the cool people eat, but I like milk chocolate.
Well, if I'd known that it was that, if I'd known that it meant that much to you, I would have gotten one of each.
It means everything to me. This day is ruined. This entire day.
It is so hard to find a solid bunny, though.
No, I know. We looked and hunted around.
Like, even See's Candy, which is generally, you're like...
You're going to reliable.
The place
you're
to go
get it,
for things.
You're going to get what you want at See's.
Yeah. All the Easter bunnies. Hollow. Hollow.
It's disheartening.
Very.
We have 4 films to discuss today.
We do.
We both saw The Curse of La Llorona.
We did.
We both saw Little Woods.
Mm-hmm.
You saw Fast Color.
Yes.
And I saw the documentary Hail Satan.
Yes.
Yes.
3 out of these 4 films directed by women.
Yes.
That's very exciting.
It is not exciting if you're that puke face person that's harassing April on Twitter right now.
He's not harassing as much as he's actuallying, but it's still annoying.
That's harassment. If you start your tweet with not to be a dick, but blah, 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 why don't you just stop right there and not be a dick? How about that? Gentlemen.
You've already answered your own question.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. The Curse of La Llorona.
Yes.
I didn't know that there was such a thing as a La Llorona until the 90s.
When you were teaching in Texas?
Yes. Because no Mexican person I had ever talked to in my life ever mentioned it. Which I consider that a failing of friendship. And
I don't think I'd heard of it until then either.
Because
it's not a Spanish thing.
No. I was going to ask you that next. Yep. Is there one in Spain?
I mean, I'm sure there's some equivalent. Because
there's a kind of that. There's a kind of that character in lots of countries.
Yes. Yeah. Yolanda pointed that out in her review on The Wrap. I'm sure Spain has any number of, you know, like... Spanish stuff is more... Catholic.
Right.
So it's more about bleeding walls than it is about, like, ghosts. But, yeah.
Mom, the blood wall is back.
I was never exposed to anything remotely La Llorona-ish as a child.
Right. It's just funny you said a bleeding wall, because I just made myself a little note about getting that blood candy.
Ugh.
That we're going to try for Linoleum Knife and Fork.
Ooh.
Food podcast that we host. I know. The absurdity of that is not lost on us. The.
Well, of course, now when I think of a bleeding wall, I think of our back bathroom. When we moved in, and you would like take a shower back there, and the wall would start bleeding nicotine.
Seeping out nicotine, because the jerks that lived here before were smokers. But instead of going out onto...
The balcony.
Like... We are the one apartment in the building. We have the best apartment in the building, a 12-unit building. We are the one apartment that has a balcony that runs the entire length of the apartment. It's nice, long balcony. It's wonderful to stand out there in the morning at 5 a.m. drinking a cup of tea. I like it. But if you were a smoker who lived here before us, and instead of going out to the balcony to smoke, and instead you went into the back bathroom,
which had a fan,
which is only like a half a bath.
That's the only thing I can think is that that's the one room in the house that has like a little
a fan in the ceiling.
Fan, yeah.
Well, you know what? It didn't do the trick.
No,
because the walls were covered in brown streaky tar. You take a shower and the walls would just seep out nicotine. This happened for a year, and I had a squeegee brush that I would use to just squeegee the walls.
Ugh.
Yeah. Garbage people. So that has nothing to do with La Llorona.
It does not.
Other than the walls were crying nicotine. So in Mexico, it's this folk legend. A beautiful woman meets a handsome rich man. She marries him. They have two children.
He betrays her.
He falls out of love with her and he betrays her. And he comes to her and he says, "Here's my new woman. Goodbye. Tell our children goodbye." I hope I'm getting this right. And in grief and like a
vengeance,
she kills the kids. "I'll take these away from you." And now she wanders the other world, weeping for her lost children
and looking for other children to replace them.
Yes. So not necessarily to murder those children.
Nope.
But just to replace them.
Yes.
You'll be swept away by La Llorona
into a dimension that is neither life nor death.
Yes. And this will happen to you if you do not behave.
Yes.
And listen to your parents.
Finish those vegetables or La Llorona is...
My favorite line in Yolanda's review that is running on the rap is, "This is a tactic used to lovingly traumatize your children into obedience."
By generations of parents.
So, I have my students, they're all, sixth graders back in the day. And they would talk about La Llorona. Like, "You better watch out. She's going to come get you," to each other, And I asked them, I was like, "Please explain this to me." And the kids who spoke English the best, because I was an ESL teacher.
Right.
I had first year kids who were like just in the beginning stages of learning to speak English. And so the kid who spoke the best English would always be the one to explain the thing that I needed explaining.
Yeah.
So they did. And yeah, there are Spanish language. There's at least one, probably more, Spanish language films about La Llorona.
Yes.
One of them is from the 60s. That's the one I could find. And it's also called The Curse of La Llorona. This one stars Linda Cardellini, who is not Latina. She is married in the film. Her character is the widow of Latino police officer. And they have two children. And he's gone. But the kids are like 8 and 10 or whatever-ish, roughly those ages.
For two people who are civil servants, because she works for Child Protective Services, they have a huge house.
Well, it's set in 1973.
Still.
When you could have an old big house like that.
A huge house.
And it probably didn't.
With a pool.
Yeah. You could have a giant old house like that in the old part of Los Angeles, and no one thought you were rich. It was just sort of like, oh, you go for one of those old houses.
Mm.
But I don't know where they shot this movie, what house that is in this city, but I had nothing but house envy the entire time.
Yes, it's an amazing house.
I assume those interiors are real interiors of this real house, just a guess.
Who knows?
All
those window seats.
Yeah. It could have all been made up on a set, but the exterior is like still choice.
And they use a real backyard for that whole swimming pool stuff.
Yeah. Okay, so the story. Patricia Velasquez, who I don't see in movies enough, and I was very excited to see her here. She plays a woman who is taken away by the police. Her children are taken from her because they...
She has locked them in a closet.
She has locked them in a closet, and she keeps saying, don't let them out of the closet or she'll get them. And, you know, there are burns on the kids' arms, and they're like, did your mother do this to you? And they're like, no, no, no.
She did.
She did. Like, I'm just... Could someone just say the name? Instead of actually confusing the Child Protective Services
Stop
people
Abbott into Costello-ing
thinking it's your mom. Yeah. Meanwhile, Patricia Velasquez is, like, deranged with fear, right? And Linda Cardellini is her friend and the caseworker for her, you know, this ongoing series of troubles that the family is facing. Again, they won't tell anyone, but it's because of La Llorona.
Right.
And so they take the kids away, and then the kids wind up dead. And they arrest Patricia Velasquez. And Patricia Velasquez blames Linda Cardellini for all this mess, because if you would just let me keep him in the closet away from La Llorona, everything would have been fine. But no, now, and here's the part where I don't think this is what you do, I'm told. Patricia Velasquez starts praying to La Llorona to come get Linda Cardellini's kids and kill those kids.
Well, I think she...
Or replace them.
I think she thinks there's a swap possible.
I guess,
that if she can take Linda Cardellini's kids, that she'll get hers back.
Kill those kids, she gets her dead kids back. Yeah. Right. Okay, so... Anyway, La Llorona sets her sights on Linda Cardellini and those two kids.
Yes.
Now, here's the part that I was sitting in the audience of the press screening thinking to myself. They all seem to be taken completely by surprise that there is such a thing called La Llorona. But if your dad was Mexican, your mom could still be Italian Linda Cardellini, right?
Right.
But if your dad was Mexican and you grew up in Los Angeles and you yourself were like part of his culture... He would have at one point said to you, you better behave or La Llorona's going to come get you. And so, like,
Well, this is also one of those movies where a widow seems to have, like, no friends.
Right, none
like,
at all.
There's, like, there's one guy, like, who was her husband's partner, who's played by the guy from Save the Last Dance.
Yeah.
Sean...
Sean Patrick...
Tom?
Sean Patrick, the thing,
Sean, three names. Anyway...
He's got three names.
But it's like where... There's no husband's... Like, there's no aunt or cousin who could pop
Sean
in.
Sean Patrick Thomas.
Sean Patrick
Thomas. I'm very sorry about that. It's
a firsty.
All fans of Sean Patrick Thomas.
But, like, yeah, there's no... You know, so she has to basically... She goes to the kids, to the memorial service for the kids... and talks to a priest there and sees a curandero there. And the priest who was... played
Raymond Cruz, who's been...
No. He's the curandero.
That's what I said.
I'm not talking about him yet. I'm talking about the priest.
Oh, sorry.
Who was in the first Annabelle movie, which is enough of a connective tissue to make this a Conjuring film.
Right. And I was like, uh-oh. So when they flash on Annabelle Creation, I'm thinking... Is Annabelle Creation going to come fight La Llorona? Because that would be dope. That didn't happen.
No, sadly. You never get what you want. No. So the priest, in turn, connects her with the curandero, played by Raymond Cruz.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's got bags of things.
Yes. All the things that curanderos have that I don't understand.
Yeah.
And, and then that's, you know, the movie is all about La Llorona. I'm tripping over my L's and my A's. La Llorona coming to try to get the kids.
Yeah.
So, as a horror movie, divorced entirely from cultural contexts, the Conjuring people, they've got their formula down.
Yeah.
They do very effective PG-13 horror films. Mix of jump scares... and atmospheric dread. A little too heavy on the jump scares, because they always are. And jump scares don't do it for me at all, because unless you're really creative, you can count the silence beats until one's coming.
True. Was it Pet Sematary that you said had some that actually caught you by surprise?
Pet Sematary had a couple that caught me by surprise.
Yeah.
I still don't care for them, because I think it's cheating.
Yeah.
Make me afraid in some other way. don't just like give me a loud noise that jolts me out of my seat.
Stretch out the dread, you know.
But in any case, by the time this was over, I thought, well, you know what? That was creepy and spooky, and there was enough jolting stuff, and I was, you know, feeling it for the characters. I wanted them to get out of this, you know, alive. I wanted Patricia Velasquez to be okay, you know. I didn't want the Cordero to die. Like, I didn't. I just wanted everything to be okay. They set up a thing at the end that could mean something else is going to happen next. We don't know. Depends on how well this does at the box office, if they pursue the La Llorona franchise.
Apparently, it had a pretty good opening weekend. Yeah. Because, you know, there is a big Latin audience for horror films.
However. Everybody I know that is Latino.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't know how to say it. I don't know how to say
Latinx.
Do I say Latinx or do I say Latinx? I don't know.
Latinx.
And until someone can tell me definitively how to pronounce it, I feel stupid trying to say it.
I've always heard Latinx.
Okay.
From people who are Latinx.
All right. Well, then I'll go with that.
Okay.
Anyway, everyone I know who is Latinx, either in print or in person, has said, you know what? F this movie.
Yeah, and I see the point.
And I get it. Yeah.
You have your heroine and you know, savior of the family is white lady.
Yeah.
And the most prominent...
And that's not even the worst problem.
And then, but then you've got Patricia Velasquez, who is presented as, like, bananas.
I didn't read that as, you know, a dichotomy in the film. I just read it as, oh no, she's trapped in this world herself. Oh, look, it's ham glaze
ham
time.
Do you want me to pause or do you want me to...
Yeah, well, if you have something to say while I do the glaze, you can do it.
I think, you know, so the problem here is, yes, obviously the Patricia Velasquez character is at a point in her own personal La Llorona journey where she is not sleeping and obsessive and, you know, terrified and all that stuff. But the end result is that you have Linda Cardellini looking large and in charge and capably taking steps to defend her family, whereas Patricia Velasquez kind of comes off as being, like, high-strung and you know, possibly sinister in a way.
In defense of that.
It's like, you know, why didn't she get a curandero? Why, you know, why is she just relying on a closet door with a bunch of eyes painted on it and a lock from the hardware store? That's my other issue with this movie, is the La Llorona rules are never made very clear. Because
they're making them up.
They're totally making it up, yeah. So it's like she can throw furniture around, she can make your flashlight go dead, but, you know, paint some eyes on a closet door and put a master lock on it and, you know, she's going to stay out. So it's like, well, what are her powers exactly? Does she need to roll a 20-sided die for this? Like, I need to know how this is set up. So that's a weird thing. All right, I'm going to pause now.
Okay, we did have to pause for a moment. I was 20 seconds away from coming back to the table.
I know, but I'd kind of run out of things. This show is a back and forth, you know.
The script, did we talk about the screenplay? Not written by...
Written
by white people.
Yeah. The white people behind 5 feet apart.
Yeah, so like... And I'm not saying... I say this all the time when this comes up. I'm not saying white people can't write stories about people whose cultures are not their own. I'm saying that seems to be what happens all the time.
Yes.
And with often quite little concern for, you know, anything resembling an understanding of the culture they're writing about.
Well, and so, I'm also of the school of, like, if you aren't going to hire more Latin writers to write about white people, then stop hiring white writers to write about Latin people.
Yeah, there just needs to be more coming correct across the board. But this is the entertainment business, and that's a long, difficult struggle. Anyway, so, is it an effective horror movie? Yes. Is it a responsible horror movie? Yeah.
Well, there are still worse movies in the Conjuring verse.
Oh, yeah, that first Annabelle movie.
Yeah, and The Nun was pretty stupid, too.
The Nun was also stupid. Right. Talk about You Got a Fast Color.
So Fast Color is the new film from Julia Hart, and she co-wrote it with her husband, who was one of the producers of La La Land. And it is... it's kind of like an indie superhero movie in a way, which sounds weird, but I mean it...
Explain what you're talking about.
Please. Well, okay, so Gugu Mbatha-Raw plays a woman who, as we get to know her, we understand that she has an affliction of some sort that she's not able to control involving these seizures that make earthquakes happen.
Okay.
And all this is happening in a sort of future dystopia where it hasn't rained in years, and so water is like the really pricey currency.
Right.
And as she is being pursued by scientists with the government who want to study her for heaven knows what reasons,
yeah,
she is making her way back home towards her mother's house. Her mother's played by the great Lorraine Toussaint. And her mother is raising a young woman played by Sanaya Sidney. Mm-hmm. And we find out that the young woman is actually the daughter of the Gugu Mbatha-Raw character, and that they all have these powers that have been passed down through the maternal bloodline.
Okay.
And so, you know, there's a lot of metaphor to be read into here about, you know, women and their power and their ability to embrace it and their, you know, whether or not society, you know, stands in the way of them being able to do so. And, you know, I have to say, I love this movie. I need to see it again.
Really?
Because I feel like there's more going on than I was able to get in one viewing.
Okay.
But what I got is great. I mean, right, this is a great looking film.
How wide is it opening this week?
It's not huge. And I don't...
It's a Lionsgate movie, right?
It's Lionsgate's shingle called Code Black, which okay. is for sort of black audience films.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know they had that.
They do.
What have they released under that?
I don't know, but it's... it doesn't get as wide a release as the straight up Lionsgate stuff.
I see.
And from what I'm, you know, I follow Julia Hart on Twitter, and she's been sort of like, go see this movie because it's not going to be around for long, even in the few places where it is. Like she's been doing these sort of guerrilla Q&As after screenings, and she went to Baldwin Hills for on Friday night for opening, and Jen Yamato did a Q&A with her and one of the actresses, and she said the theater didn't even have a one sheet for the film. So it's not being promoted the way that it should be. It's not getting out in the world the way it should be. But go look for this movie because it is a movie that is sort of steeped in kind of metaphorical possibilities. But just on its surface as a story of these people in this time and dealing with the stuff they're dealing with and dealing with the relationships with each other within the family.
Yeah.
Fascinating. The cast also includes David Strathairn and this guy from Billions, who I like, who's very good at being kind of like functionaries, Christopher Denham. I hope you get to see this movie.
Okay. I will.
Yeah.
The one that I saw that you did not is Hail Satan.
Yes. With a question mark.
With a question mark. It's a documentary from Penny Lane, who made Our Nixon a mm-hmm. few years back. And as a trolling release date, Easter weekend could not possibly be a better time to release this film. The
when I was in college, I tried to show Godard's Hail Mary on Easter, and they wouldn't let me.
What do you mean?
When I was programming the campus cinema.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It was that semester we were going to show Hail Mary because it would just come out and it was now available for campuses.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, let's do it on Easter weekend. And they were like, nope.
Chickens. Scaredy cats. Scaredy boots.
Indeed.
I have been told recently that by a friend who moved to Berlin that... you cannot screen The Life of Brian on Easter Sunday in Germany.
Huh.
That's strange.
Wow.
I don't know if that's a law
or just a suggestion,
like a federal or what. But I saw The Life of Brian for the very first time on an Easter, on Easter Sunday.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was in a double feature with The Last Temptation of Christ.
Ooh.
At the Scala Cinema in London.
Good one.
In 1989.
Hmm.
I've told you this story before, I think even on this microphone situation, but I sat, this was back in the day when I was young, and I could sit through double features without my entire body turning numb. Can't do that anymore. But the, so this one, do y'all remember a few years ago, the hubbub about the Ten Commandments statue on public land outside of like a courthouse in Oklahoma?
Oh, I was gonna say Alabama. That's probably a different.
Well, no, it's probably there was probably one there too because back when Paramount was promoting the Ten Commandments, the film
in the 50s,
they sent Charlton Heston out with like Ten Commandments. They sent him out to like. Like open a supermarket, like to unveil the Ten Commandments statues in various like states, and of course, being Chuck Heston, you know he's gonna do all of that. There's footage of this in the documentary.
Oh, fascinating!
And you know, there's also footage of Billy Graham in the 1950s whipping up, you know, satanic fear and stuff like that, and, well, and this became, advocating for the United States being a Christian country.
I was saying that that became a part of, sort of an anti-communist cudgel for the Cold War.
Yes,
right?
It did. Yes,
like adding under God to the Pledge under of God, Allegiance.
Under God being added to the Pledge of Allegiance, In God We Trust being added to the money. All of this happened in the 1950s.
Yeah.
And it put us on the path to the wannabe theocracy that we are today. There are people in the United States who would love nothing more than to throw the Constitution out the window and replace it with their version of what the United States should be, based entirely on their conservative evangelical interpretation of the Bible.
You can usually spot these people because they are also very panicky about Sharia law.
They are. That freaks them out. We can't have Muslims taking over the country and putting us under their religious rules until...
We have to have Christians take over the country and put them under their religious rules.
So there wasn't a thing called the Satanic Temple until not so long ago. And they formed as a gang of individuals in various states. There weren't clubs or groups or anything, but people who just decided to start trolling evangelical Christians. And one of the things they did when they finally got themselves organized was, well, if we can have a Ten Commandments on the lawn of a courthouse in Oklahoma, then we can also have a statue of a satanic figure with, like, children standing next to him looking up adoringly at him.
So these are like, this is where the Church of the Subgenius morphed into this, probably.
Probably, yeah. It's not people who, like, worship any sort of literal idea of Satan or any literal... you know, incarnation of Satan. It's people who just want to fight back against encroaching Christian domination of United States public life.
They're rebuilding the wall between church and state.
Now, because these are folks that are sort of running defense, they are, like I said, very effective trolls.
Mm-hmm.
And went so far as to have the statue made up, do press releases, do press conferences, unveil the statue for a minute.
Baphomet?
Yeah, Baphomet. and then, like, roll it away. Like, they remind me, in many ways, of the Yes Men.
Oh,
the
yes.
The Yes Men are the anti-corporate trolls,
right,
who run around invading, like, corporate events, mm, and putting on, like, fake... you know, things that harshly critique, you know, corporate domination of all of life on Earth.
Right.
And and very often get booted out, arrested, kicked out of places. Like, but they make sure there's someone always documenting what they're doing. There have been at least two Yes Men documentaries that are absolutely delightful. I cannot recommend them highly enough. So the Satanic Temple are pretty much the Yes Men of
religion,
sticking their finger up the nose of conservative evangelical Christians. Now that they are more organized and they are often, you know, a variety of states, there is the usual infighting and finding each other disappointing or not hardline enough or too hardline, or, you know, one of the women who's very prominent in the documentary called for the, I don't know if she called for the assassination of Trump or if she called for just violence. And the organization, the larger group of people said, no, we're nonviolent. We're not actually out to commit chaos and violence and evil. You can't say these things. And she's like, I can say anything I want. They're like, okay, well,
you're not speaking
for us and you're kicked out. And then she's on camera being interviewed. She's like, I find that really hilarious that I got kicked out of the Church of Satan, the Satanic Temple, for being too satanic. This is a very funny documentary. And it is also one way, if you feel like being theatrical about it, one way to protest the, you know, inching, creeping, theocratic nature of public life in the U.S. If you are not into the trolling element of it, and you don't want to have to go to a, you know, semi-ironic black mass, I guess, it can also serve as a documentary that reminds you of why joining groups is such a pain.
Well, yes.
And how it can be just annoying to be around people who agree with everything you are and yet still make you...
They're still annoying.
They're still bothering you? Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm glad they're out there doing what they're doing. Because, you know, certainly whenever people try and use the Bible as their excuse for, like, why, you know, we can discriminate against gay people, for instance, I always think, where's the Metropolitan Community Church? Like, they're a religion, and they're super pro-gay, and what about their religious freedom? And they clearly don't feel like getting into these fights with people.
Right.
You never see them suing, like, the clerk who won't give out same-sex marriage licenses or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so if they're not going to do it, somebody needs to.
And then finally, we both saw Little Woods.
Yes.
Which is opening limited this weekend and eventually larger.
Expanding.
I guess.
I believe so, yes.
In time. It's from Nia DaCosta. And has she made... What has she made before this? She made...
I know she's got a lot coming out soon.
Well, she's working on the new Candyman.
Yes.
And she's worked on stuff before. Lots of Kesha music videos. No, this is her first feature.
Okay.
Okay.
And she's got something also called Top Boy.
Right, which I don't know anything about. Anyway, this stars Tessa Thompson and Lily James as sisters in, was it North Dakota?
Yes.
Yeah. And their mother has just died. And so Tessa Thompson is grieving that. The house is kind of in disarray. She's unemployed. She's trying to make ends meet by making food and coffee for local construction workers. Although she is a nurse.
They're not construction workers. They're like oil field.
I think it's guys.
Like fracking or something.
She's a nurse, though. And so one of the things that she... But she's not employed.
She's wrapping up her probation.
That's right. She's on probation. And she's also selling stolen prescription drugs.
Well, that at first she's not, because she's ending the probation for having like made these runs to Canada to get medications and stuff. And people are coming to her for drugs because like they're in pain from work. And if they go to the ER, they wait there for 8 hours and nobody sees them. And then their shift comes up and they have to go back to work.
Yeah.
And but she's not doing that anymore. She's trying to keep her nose clean. She's in the last like week or so of her probation. And then everything starts falling apart.
Because her sister, Lily James, comes to her and needs help.
Yes.
And the call of quick money comes back into play, especially when the bank decides they're going to foreclose on the parents' house.
Right.
So to keep the house and keep a roof over everyone's heads, she's got to dive back into getting those drugs for people and going over the border. Meanwhile, Lily James comes up pregnant from her no-good boyfriend, played by James Badge Dale. The drug dealer, who is a jerk and menacing to Tessa Thompson, is played by Luke Kirby, who plays Lenny Bruce on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Right.
And this is a film about two women who have to work outside the system and run a game to get what they need.
Yeah.
Because the system is broken and ruins the lives of poor people.
Yeah, if the sister wants an abortion, she's going to have to travel a really long distance.
Because there are no clinics in the area, because refer to the documentary we just were talking about.
Yeah, and if she wants to keep the baby, that's going to be like $8,000 or $9,000 of prenatal care that is not covered by her insurance.
Right, well, she's lost her insurance.
Right.
She said. Yeah. So they're desperate. And they've got to get into Canada to get the drugs, to get the abortion. And then things happen.
Yeah.
We will not tell you any more plot. How do you feel about this film?
I liked it quite a bit. I have to say, like, while I was watching it, I remember squirming at times.
Yes.
The way you do in a horror movie where you're like, it's that feeling of, don't go in there. But it's like, it's not that they're going in there. It's what life is doing, you know?
Yeah.
You know, this is a movie about, you know, these hard times.
Yes.
You know, the times in which we live and how the system is set up to screw poor people.
Yes.
And
keep them poor.
Yeah. And to push, you know, honorable people to committing dishonorable acts, but then being ready to like put the hammer down on them for committing those acts, even though they really didn't have a choice because of everything else.
I don't think anything they're doing is dishonorable. I think it's illegal.
Well,
because it is, but it's
dishonorable is the wrong word. But
it's illicit stuff that you got to do
exactly
to get what you need.
You know, I
vote socialist, y'all. That's what I'm trying to say here.
That's continue. Right. Tessa Thompson, of course, is great. She's always great. The real revelation to me was Lily James.
Yeah.
I've always sort of put her in the pocket of, like, you know, Felicity Jones and, you know, like the young British girls who aren't like thrilling me, like, because a lot of them are, you know. I love Gemma Arterton. I am now on board for the Carrie Mulligan train after Wildlife.
And she has her own choo-choo and she's been conducting it. And she's been saying, oh, Alonzo, please jump on the choo-choo train of Carrie Mulligan. I'm the conductor and I'm here to help you understand my acting abilities.
This,
and now you have finally,
this, okay, there may be,
like the Cure song, jumped on the train.
Maybe it's my failing and not anyone else's, but
I say it is your failing.
This movie does for Lily James what Wildlife does for Carrie Mulligan.
She has finally done something that made you think, oh, you're not just the flibbertigibbet on Downton Abbey.
Basically.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, that was acting too, Alonzo.
I understand that.
She was Cinderella.
Yeah, and she was basically just doing Lady Rose again.
It worked.
Anyway, she's very good in this.
I think you're right. She's very good in this. I think Tessa Thompson carries the whole movie.
Well, I think it's structured for Tessa Thompson to carry the whole movie.
And she's so great.
Yeah, she's almost never off camera. Like, right. there's that one scene that Lily James and James Badge Dale have together in his room.
Yeah.
That's like the one time Tessa Thompson's not.
Where you think to yourself as you're watching that scene, wow, the two best people, the two best looking people in this rural area got together and made kids. Like,
that's probably what usually
that's
happens.
That's probably, I guess, what usually happens, yeah.
Yeah, that scans. And you find out that the Lily James character, like, was a stripper, and, you know, right. so it's not like, you know, that plain thing, you know. this is a social realist drama, and I think works on that level.
For me, there was a little bit of too much. When I walked out of it, I thought, that was good. I wish Kelly Reichardt had directed it. Wow. I've since, you know...
You like it more now than when...
I like it more now than when I've had more time to think about it. It's been 2 weeks since we've seen it. Mm-hmm. But I've had more time to think about it, and I think it's very effective, and it's moving, and it's... meaningful. It's about something. It's about something real and important and true that's happening right now in this country. And so on that alone, I recommend it. There are song cues that I thought were a little intrusive and, you know, a little directorially, I wanted a little less when I was getting a little more, like I was getting a little too much when I personally wanted less. Never, you know, assume that, you know, before leaving the house, take one thing off, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
This movie needed to remove.
But in general, it's good. I think she's a talented filmmaker, and I'm looking forward. I can't wait for that Candyman. Oh, how I love Candyman. And I'm that's like the one reboot that I'm looking forward to.
I want to give a shout out to Charlie Ray Reed, who plays Lily James's son.
Why?
Because I thought he was a very unaffected kid actor.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You know? Hadn't really considered that, but I think that might be true.
I don't know if it's all the Hallmark I watch, but I see a lot of kid performances.
Well, you see a lot of kid actors that in go Hallmark right to the fillings. Yeah. They're directed.
Oh, yeah. No. They have been directed to maximum adorability.
Yeah.
And this kid felt very natural, likable, you know, a loving presence, but never like, you know, never overboard with that.
Got a DVD pick this week? Do you? Huh?
Well, I'm pretty sure I have recommended this movie before, but it is streaming on Netflix. So what the heck? Once again, I shall bang the drum for Miss Stevens, which is Julia Hart's first film that she made before Fast Color, which the year that I was on the jury at South by Southwest, we gave a special award to Lily Rabe for her lead performance, which I think is exceptional. And it also features a very strong supporting performance from a fairly unknown at the time young actor named Timothée Chalamet. But it's a movie about a school teacher who takes a group of kids to one of those sort of weekend drama competitions that high schools compete in, and a lot of stuff happens, but it's very much a character piece, and I think Lily Rabe is extraordinary. There's a scene where Chalamet, you see his character performing in the drama competition, doing the son's big monologue from the end of Death of a Salesman. And I love scenes where actors show you what good acting looks like.
Yeah.
Because I think that's super tricky to do, because it's almost like I don't know if it's, there's less of a veil or more of a veil, but you know, it's like when Emma Stone auditions in La La Land, or even more so when Naomi Watts auditions in Mulholland Drive. It's like, oh, they are actors being a good actor in a movie right now. And that's what Chalamet does in this scene. And I think it's pretty impressive. And how about you?
Well, we have a special episode coming up in the next couple weeks. Our friend and fellow film critic, Manola Dargis is going to be a guest on our show. We're going to talk about recently deceased filmmakers. The ones that she delightfully refers to as off Hollywood. Because there's been about four of them that have passed away recently in 2019. Mm-hmm. Barbara Hammer, Jonas Mekas, Agnes Varda, Larry Cohen, all four of them as different from one another as they can be.
Yes.
And so, you know, I like to do my homework, so I'm doing some homework. And one of the Agnes Varda films that I had never seen is Le Bonheur, 1965.
Feature
film. It is, I think it was her second or third narrative feature after
Cleo.
Cleo from 5 to 7. It won the Grand Jury Prize at the Berlin Film Festival that year. Le Bonheur did. Mm. And it is the story of a young carpenter who works for his uncle and lives a very happily married life to his wife. They have two wonderful children. They have a lovely life together. They love each other. They are having regular sex. They are going on Sunday picnics. They are content. And then, dude decides that he's so happy that he just needs a little bit more happiness.
Mm.
And he finds a little bit more happiness with a second young lady. And I won't spoil the rest. Although I could, because it is a film that is 54 years old.
This is, by the way, the feature she did right after Cleo. It's her third feature, though.
Yes. La Pointe...
La Pointe Courte. Yeah. Courte.
So anyway, I saw that. I want to tell you that what you think it is not what it is. And you don't find out what it is until the last, 10 minutes. It's an 80-minute feature, so it's quite short. But once again, very much like Cleo from 5 to 7, her editing and the way she frames people's bodies as they, you know, do these daily sort of domestic things and enact almost like a kitsch form of happiness. I mean, that's the name of the film, Happiness.
Right. Take that, Todd Solondz.
You know something's coming, and something is coming. It's really great.
And you saw it on?
I saw it on the Criterion Channel, which is my new boyfriend. And I have, in keeping with the themes of this film, I have two new boyfriends, the Criterion Channel and the Ovid Channel, which we also just got hooked up with, which is even more obscure art house than the Criterion Channel and new art house stuff from the past few years from people like Icarus and Grasshopper and,
Kim Stim, Women Make Movies.
Yeah. First Run.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent, excellent, excellent thing. So, yeah, doing the homework. And if you've got Criterion Channel or you just want to go get this DVD or Blu-ray, I guess it's out there. Or to be streamed somewhere, I'm probably sure as well. It's really, really worth seeing.
Probably on Canopy, too.
Yeah, Canopy, that's free with your library card.
I got to try and hook up with Canopy because I tried signing in the day that I renewed my library card and it wouldn't recognize it, but maybe I wasn't in the system long enough yet or whatever.
Right.
Anyway. All right. So, hey, that is our show.
We'll do letters next time because
there's a ham.
I've got ham things that I have to finish doing. Sorry.
If you have not already, why don't you go to patreon.com/linoleumknife and check out the bounty that is our Patreon subscription page.
It is the trip to Bountiful.
Yes.
And here's what you get. I'll handle this.
Oh, okay.
You get OKTV, which is a podcast about television. And we do a lot of non-comprehensive television critical work because it is impossible to do anything else. We watch what we watch, and then we talk about it. You will hear the ongoing saga of Wendy Williams and her life as it imitates her art. You will hear us talk about, this week, we're going to talk about the new Netflix series Special. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about Beyonce Homecoming.
Now Apocalypse.
So
I'm very proud of the episode we just posted that was all about Easter specials of yore.
Yeah, mostly the 70s through the 90s.
Yeah.
With some of them are just, well, they're all terrible.
Pretty much. But an undersung corner of scholarship.
We do a show called Linoleum Knife and Fork, which was requested by listeners.
Because of episodes like this where we're talking about the ham.
I spend so much time on this show actually talking about what I'm making for Sunday dinner that eventually listeners came to me and said, you know what, you guys should just do a podcast that's entirely about food. So it's about cooking, it's about food, it's about eating, it's about food justice issues, it's about, you know, all sorts of things.
Weird products.
The blood candy that I just referenced on Instagram today at D. Leland White is a real thing, and we're going to try it. So we understand that a food podcast hosted by two film critics is ridiculous. A food podcast hosted by two film critics. Did I say it backwards?
No, you said it right.
I said it right? I thought I said it backwards.
But we were there to tell you, do not try peanut butter and chocolate pebbles.
That is correct. Do not try the peanut butter and chocolate pebbles. Butter and cocoa pebbles.
Yes.
Because it's disgusting. And so if you don't listen, you won't know. If you know, then you know. We also do a show called Linoleum Nights, which is for adults. We talk about politics, sex, religion. We go deeper into those subjects than we do here, even though if you listen to us here, you already know what we're about. That's also the one non-clean. It's the explicit one where we say our favorite F-swear.
Yes.
A lot, because when this microphone is off, that's how we talk. We're just trying to keep it nice for your kids in the car. I hope you appreciate that.
And Nights is also the one show that we do live on a secret Facebook page. So
very secret.
If you are a member of at a level where you get Linoleum Nights,
you get to watch us.
Tune in and watch us do it.
Every Sunday morning, bright and early. Mm. I know that's antithetical to a show called Nights, but that's what we do. If you join up on Patreon, you also get things, t-shirts, mugs, tote bags,
daily recommendations,
enamel badges, pins, and the magnets, and just like a whole bunch of stuff. There's also
private,
a thing called Private Knife where you can, tell us what you want the podcast to be about. And then we record like a 20-minute podcast that's just for you, about you, for you, and only you. And then if you join even at the $1 level, you get the LKRX, which is a daily prescription of culture.
Yes.
That we post on the page, and you learn about our obsessions that extend beyond the world of film, television, food,
whatnot.
There aren't a lot of things beyond those three things, but we scare it up somehow. So we're done.
Yes. So patreon.com/linoleumknife. Thank you for listening. Check out all of our friends on the internet. Go to chrissylemire.com. Go listen to Cancel Too Soon and Critically Acclaimed from our friends Bibbs and Whitney, the Schmoes Know Network, Dennis Enun with Dennis Hensley, the Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to the show for free at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review. No one's left us a 5-star review lately.
What's the deal?
So don't sleep on that, please. Someone go leave us some love on Apple Podcasts. It helps people find the show. We appreciate it.
If you think I'm bullying you to do this, you're right.
You can also leave us positive feedback in all the places that we stream, like Stitcher Radio and Spotify and Google Play. You can follow us at Linoleum Cast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. He and his work live over at blutopia.com, B-L-E-U-T-O-P-I-A. And you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions or comments. Hope everyone's having a lovely Easter and a lovely Passover. And we'll be back next time with more. And until then,
goodbye.